Visionaries Global Media, your number one source for podcasting entertainment.
That's all we have time for this week. We'll see you next week on episode 60.
What?
Episode 59, Coppin at Sacred Heart. Sacred Heart, actually, were currently, I'm not sure if they still are, but were top of the NEC going into this. This is actually five games in the NEC later on. This is kind of late. We're actually recording this on the Saturday, the 13th. This actually took place on the 5th. We were going to record earlier in the week. Didn't quite get around to it. No big deal. All right, inning one, go ahead. Game one, I guess.
Inning one, game one, no runs. Second inning, 2-0 Sacred Heart. Mm-hmm. Third inning, 5-0 Sacred Heart. Fourth inning, 5-1 Sacred Heart. Fifth inning, 8-1 Sacred Heart.
All right, stop there then. So the big inning then, Coppin State, top of the sixth. Damon Gaither doubled to right center. Sam Nieves signaled up the middle.
Nice.
Asensio, I think it's Jaden Asensio, right? Single through the right side, two runs scored. One run scored, I apologise. Gaither scored 8-2. Marte flied out. Asensio failed pickoff attempt. Sam Nieves advanced to third on a throwing error. Angel walked. Braden Watson singled through the right side. Asensio scored and Nieves scored 8-4. Daniel Moore grounded out. Keeps it at 8-4. Anthony DiVittorio singled through the right side, but two RBIs, Watson and Cologne both scored. Holmes singled to left field, and DiVittorio advanced to second, and unfortunately Damon Gaither struck out looking. So it brings the game back to 8-6. So the inning, it was five runs on six hits, one error, and there was two left on base. But we're starting to get a little bit closer for this game. All right, keep going then.
So Sacred Heart score for that one?
Mm-hmm. Sacred Heart got two, so that would make the score 10-6 at the end of the sixth.
All right. Seventh inning, 13-8, mm-hmm. Sacred Heart. And then in the eighth, inning, 9-18.
Final score, Coppin didn't put any up in the ninth, 11 unfortunately.
11 hits to 10.
Yeah, they got more hits.
Four errors for both.
Yeah, I just noticed that as well. Four errors on both, that's
but
not particularly good.
Sacred Heart had double the amount of runs scored.
They did, yeah. 91 in attendance, very specific number. Oh, the location is Veterans Park. You often have your practices and games at Veterans Park. I didn't notice that
at the
time.
It's in Connecticut.
It's a completely different one, obviously. But I hadn't noticed that one at the time. I'll look at the pitching stats if you want to start looking through the Coppin. At-bats, Nico Felber opened the pitch in five innings, six earned runs, seven walks, and six strikeouts. That's, once again, not like Nico. Liam McCollum came in, 1.2 innings, five earned runs. Brandon Stevens came in, 0.2 innings and five earned runs. And Michael Matthews came in for the last 0.2. Got away from them a little bit. The winner for Sacred Heart was Babushak, 5-3 on the season, 5.2 innings, six earned runs, three walks and six strikeouts.
All right.
Any other bats significant for Coppin?
Braylon had three hits.
Mm-hmm.
Anthony and Kai had one hit. Damon and Sam had two.
Okay.
Angel had one hit.
Yep. And from Sacred Heart, obviously with that many runs, there's going to be some RBIs on here. Zavalchik had had four RBIs. Unger had three. Maguire had two. Damore had four. So, yeah, there were some significant ones from that one. Now, the interesting stat for me that I saw in this game, as I was looking through, I mentioned that Nico had a lot of bases on balls.
Mm-hmm.
Liam had five, Brandon had four, and Michael had two. So they only pitched eight innings. They didn't even need to go into the ninth. They gave up 18 walks. I'm like, ooh. And I was like, I wonder if that's a record. I'm like, that's a lot. Now, I couldn't find the college record. All it tells you is for players who managed to get on base. I couldn't find it from the pitching side.
What is NP?
Might be number of pitches.
Okay.
Anyway, here's some of the records I found from a 9-inning game, JJ. How many walks were given up? New York gave up 17 in 1944. Brooklyn gave up 17 in 1903. Chicago gave up 17 in 1887. Detroit and Cleveland gave up 18 in 1916 and 1948, respectively. The record for Major League Baseball is Louisville versus Cleveland, 19, but it's all the way back in 1887. So, I don't know. 18 is certainly a lot. I'm not sure if there's been more in a college game. I found there were some cool facts as well. These were fast facts from baseballalmanac.com. The Montreal Expos versus the Los Angeles Dodgers played a 22-inning game in 1989 without a single walk, setting the Major League record for the longest game without a walk by a team. That's ridiculously good pitching at that point.
I've heard of that game.
And in 1949, the New York Yankees had 11 bases on balls, courtesy of the Washington Senators, during the third inning. Setting the Major League mark for walks during an inning. The National League mark for walks during an inning was set by the Chicago Cubs, who walked 9 Cincinnati Redlegs in the fifth inning game 1957.
Redlegs?
It's just a nickname, I think. I don't think that's their official name. Anything like that. But I saw that and I was like, oh my gosh. So, yeah.
What is a red leg?
That's like Red Stockings. It's the same thing. It's the same sort of thing. It's the
same.
They
copied the Red Sox.
No. When it said Cincinnati.
I know, but if it's like a red stocking, that's what the Red Sox used to be.
All right, game two. This is on
first
Saturday.
First inning, 2-0 Coppin.
Mm-hmm.
Fourth inning, 2-1 Coppin.
Mm-hmm.
Sixth inning, 3-1 Coppin.
No.
And a 3-1 Sacred Heart. Seventh inning, 5-8 Sacred Heart.
So Coppin had 3 in that, and then would take a good lead, but unfortunately Sacred Heart came back with 5. Nothing in the 8th. So going into the 9th inning, it's 8-5, and that's going to be the big inning for this one. Coppin coming onto bat. Damon Gaither singled through the right side. Sam Nieves singled up the middle. Chris Marte walked. Thompson struck out swinging. Angel walked. Brett Griggs came in and pinch ran. Daniel Moore, I apologize, homered down the left field line. 4 RBIs. Colon scored, Griggs scored, Nieves scored. Murciano singled to center field. DiVittorio lined out to shortstop. Kaiholm got hit by a pitch. Damon Gaither got hit by a pitch, and unfortunately Sam Nieves grounded out to shortstop. At that time, bases were actually loaded as well. So they got two hit by pitches to load them up. 5 runs on the inning, 4 hits, 10, no 8, errors, 3 honestly. Left.
3 errors by Sacred Heart, none by Coppin.
Well, you kind of, yes, you got to it. It was 10-8. I was going to give you what happened in the bottom of the 9th as well. Zovalchik fouled out to first base. Donahue struck out swinging. And Unger flied out to right field.
So, 1-2-3?
1-2-3. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Alec Elgas was the starting pitcher for Coppin. 6.2 innings, 8 earned runs, no walks. And John Neal came in for the win, 2.1 innings, 2 walks, and 2 strikeouts. The thing that stood out to me, and this, as I talked to you about this, and I can't prove this, previous game, 18 walks, this game, 2 walks. I'm wondering if that's the record for the biggest differential in walks in a game. 16 difference between one game and a second game. And I couldn't find any way of actually researching that. I think the only way you can kind of do it is find something where there's a lot of walks and then try and find out what the next game is. But I would not be surprised if that was a record. Big turnaround in performance there. What about some of those bats then for Coppin, JJ?
Anthony, Sam, Daniel, and Noah had 2 hits.
Mm-hmm.
Braylon had 1. Kai and Damon had 1.
Obviously, Daniel Moore had 4 RBIs because he hit the Grand Slam. The thing I really liked about Sacred Heart is they put their games up on YouTube. So you could actually watch. I was watching certain parts of this game, and I was watching when it was close. And when I wanted to find out... Once I heard there was a Grand Slam, I went... And that's exactly what I did. I skipped to inning 9, and I just watched the rest of the game.
That's the only... part that I'm watching, since it's five runs and, yeah. and it's copping.
So it was cool to do that, but I like that they put their games out in that way. For Sacred Heart, four RBIs for Zovalchik, and that was pretty much it. There's no other real outstanding performances on the team for that one. But yeah, Karpin took the win, 82 in attendance, 3 hours and 14 minutes. But they took one off the NEC leaders, which took us into the rubber match. Can Karpin get a win against the top of the league NEC Sacred Heart?
All right. Second inning, 2-0 Sacred Heart. Third inning, 5-4 Sacred Heart.
Mm-hmm.
Fourth inning, 5-6 Sacred Heart. Mm-hmm. Fifth inning, 7-6 Karpin.
Mm-hmm.
Eighth inning, 8-6 Karpin.
All right, and then now we've got the big inning in the opposite direction. So let's see what happened for Sacred Heart. Karpin did not get any additional runs. DeMore homered immediately to center field to make it 8-7. Maguire walked. Skarad struck out swinging. Maguire advanced to second on a wild pitch. Green struck out swinging. Maguire advanced to third on another wild pitch. Donahue walked, and Maguire scored on a wild pitch. John Neal came in to pitch for Clay Thompson, and Link fouled out. But unfortunately, within that inning, two runs, one hit, no errors, and one was left on base, which actually tied the game back up, I believe, at 8-8.
10th inning, 9-8. Final score, 12-7 hits.
Mm-hmm.
One,
no errors for Karpin, just one for Sacred Heart.
Why didn't you do the third inning?
Why didn't you do the third? Because it was an important inning. Like, Karpin came back, and like I say, Sacred Heart came back, and they were two down. They managed to tie it up, and then it turned around in the end. So on the previous day,
weather,
it was the...
no thoughts, frozen brain.
On the previous... What's,
it
what?
Says that.
Oh, it does. I hadn't even noticed that. Normally it says, like, cloudy or something.
I know.
No thoughts, frozen brain. I'm sure the person meant to change that afterwards, and then they forgot to do it. 3 hours and 44 minutes on this game.
Attendance, 136.
I actually was watching this game at that time as well. So I was, Karpin were in the lead. I was like, oh, please just hold on. Please just hold on. Do you want to tell me some of the performances from Karpin's at-bats?
Kai, two hits. Salmon, Jaden had one hit. Braylon and Noah had one hit.
Sacred Heart, DeMore went 4-for-5, and Unger went 2-for-5 with two RBIs. They were probably the main ones.
Braylon had two RBIs.
Okay. Caden Straley was the starting pitcher. Three innings, six earned runs. Jackson Montgomery, 2.1 innings of relief. No earned runs, just one hit. Christian Pareja, now we know how you pronounce that name. We did better than we'd been doing before. One walk and one strikeout. Clay Thompson, three innings, two earned runs. And then John Neal took the loss, 0.1 inning and one earned run. And Foster, yeah. Why did I write down Foster's stats? I guess he was a starting pitcher. Two innings, two earned runs, seven walks. Oof, that's a lot.
How many walks
they had in total?
Anthony had two walks. Damon had two walks. Sam had two walks. Jaden had two walks. Victor had one walk, and Daniel had three walks.
Yeah, there was...
I don't know how much that is.
That's quite a few, isn't it? Let me quickly add them up. 6, 8, 9, 12. 12. Not as many, obviously, as the 18 we had the other day. And fortunately, I'm saying they're on a 13-game road trip right now. Georgetown game got rained out, as we talked about last weekend. But this time, we did get to see... You had a day off school. I had a teacher work day, but I could get out at 2:50. 3 o'clock in Arlington, George Washington. I have seen George Washington before, and I know that they played in a park, but this one was definitely not that. This was a stadium, and perhaps we'll talk about the stadium later. But as it's a new school for us, go ahead. Tell us about a little bit about George Washington.
George Washington University, GW or GWU, is a private, federally chartered research university in Washington, D.C., The first president of the United States, George Washington, long favored the establishment of the university in the central part of the United States.
Washington included a bequest of his shares in the Potomac Company in his last will and testament. Although these shares lost their value and no educational institution ever benefited from them, his desire was shared and encouraged after his death by President Thomas Jefferson and James Madison, and they expressed the need to carry out Washington's plans. Finally, in 1821, the Baptist missionary and leading minister Luther Rice secured funds from James Monroe, John Quincy Adams, and John C. Calhoun, the other benefactors, for a college to educate citizens from throughout the young nation in Washington, D.C.
As the Civil War broke out, many left their studies to fight. However, the college was still fractured as professor of anatomy since 1854. A.Y.P. Garnett left for the South to serve as Jefferson Davis's physician, and Robert King Stone stayed in Washington to serve as the physician to Abraham Lincoln.
Some big names.
I know. The college was temporarily turned into a Union military camp during this time.
I made sure you got the chance to do the Civil War part. Yeah. The school's athletic team, the George Washington Revolutionaries, play in the NCAA Division I Atlantic 10 Conference. Same conference George Mason played in, and we went to see that final last year. The university's colors are buff and blue, buff being a color similar to tan, but sometimes represented as gold or yellow, and the colors were taken from George Washington's uniform in the Revolutionary War. Yeah. You were nodding before I even got to that part.
Yeah. I noticed it was like a gold kind of color and then dark blue.
All right, your part's from the New York Post in May 2023. Okay. Because I actually thought, I was like, hold on, I don't think they're called the Revolutionaries. So I was like, okay.
George Washington University changed its colonials moniker to Revolutionaries after facing scrutiny from students who deemed the school's mascot offensive. George Washington was pressured to come up with a plan to dispel the colonial's name in 2018. More than 530 students objected to the extremely offensive colonial's moniker and claimed it has too deep of a connection to colonization and glorifies the act of systemic oppression.
I would have read it otherwise.
The school based in Washington, D.C. will implant the new name. During the 2023-24 academic year.
So this year. So when I saw them, they were the Colonials, but now they're the Revolutionaries. And actually on the stadium, it did mention Revolutionaries as well. So yeah, they haven't been that for very long at all. Many notable individuals have served as trustees, such as Alexander Graham Bell, and Presidents John Quincy Adams and Ulysses S. Grant. Yeah, there's some pretty big names here. Notable alumni, faculty, and affiliates include 16 foreign heads of state of government, 28 U.S. senators, 27 U.S. governors, 18 U.S. cabinet members, 5 Nobel laureates, 2 Olympic medalists, 2 Academy Award winners, and a Golden Globe winner. There was a lot of people when I was looking through this. I know that person. Well, it's obviously a very prestigious university. Just the fact that it's named after George Washington, the fact that it's in D.C. as well. I'm going to start with John Edgar Hoover, an American law enforcement administrator who served as the final director of the Bureau of Investigation, the BOI. I hadn't heard of that one. But the first director of the Federal Bureau of Investigation, the FBI. Yeah. President Calvin Coolidge first appointed Hoover as director of the BOI, the predecessor to the FBI, in 1924. After 11 years in the post, Hoover became instrumental in founding the FBI in 1935, where he remained as director for an additional 37 years until his death in 1972, serving a total of 48 years and under 8 different presidents. Oh my gosh, I had no idea he was in charge for that long. 48 years is a ridiculous amount of time.
I didn't even know who he was before this.
You saw the building when we're outside the FBI building, so we've talked to you about Hoover before, so I know that you do know who
is. That why the Hoover Dam is called that?
That I don't know.
Or is it the Hoover President?
Don't know.
Because there's two Hoovers.
There is, yeah.
That are really famous.
I do know that J. Edgar is slang in British for a vacuum cleaner. We don't say vacuum cleaners, we say Hoover, even though that's a brand name.
Oh, yeah.
So the slang the for is J. Edgar.
The really long nose is the hose that sucks it in.
That's, oh gosh, what's that guy called? Henry. That's Henry. They have names because they have faces on them. All right, the one you're going to read out, you actually got to... there's a reason why I'm asking you to read this one out.
Jackie Kennedy Onassis was an American writer, book editor, and socialite who served as the First Lady of the United States from 61 to 63 as the wife of JFK. A popular First Lady, she endeared... The American public with her devotion to her family, dedication to the historic preservation of the White House.
All right, so why did I get you to read out hers?
Because we went to the flame.
We took a picture of her gravestone because I said at the time, I was like, oh, I didn't know she died that long ago. I obviously couldn't remember that at all. I've got Lafayette Ronald Hubbard. I know him
as Ron. Lafayette sounds French.
It does. Ron Hubbard, an American author and founder of Scientology. In 1950, he authored Dianetics and established organizations to promote and practice these techniques. And Hubbard created Scientology in 1952.
What's that?
It's a bit of a religious cult. After losing the intellectual rights to his literature in bankruptcy, he would lead the Church of Scientology, variously described as a cult, a new religious movement, or a business, until his death in 1986. It's kind of shrouded in mystery a little bit. People who are in there don't talk about it. It's very strange. Tom Cruise apparently is part of it.
Yeah, I'll
So there's a few people from Hollywood who are part of it. All right, JJ, who was the first African American to play baseball in the modern era?
Jackie Robinson.
All right, who was the first African American to play basketball in the modern era?
I don't know.
Exactly. I wasn't sure either, to be honest. All right. Well, you're going to find out in a little bit. But go ahead. Tell us about our next person. I think the pronunciation is Auerbach? Red Auerbach.
All right.
I think.
Red Auerbach received an athletic scholarship to play for George Washington Revolutionary's men's basketball and was a standout player and graduated with M.A., what's that?
Masters of Arts.
All right.
I believe.
In 41.
Mm-hmm.
In those years, Auerbach began to understand the importance of the fast break, appreciating how potent three charging attackers against two backpedaling defendants could be.
He served as a head coach in the NBA, most notably with the Boston Celtics. That's where I know him from. I actually saw a documentary on ESPN fairly recently that talked about that Celtics dynasty. So I kind of picked up that name.
Yeah, they have a new dynasty with Giannis.
Might be a little bit early for that right now. And was also the head coach of the Washington Capitals. So I'm assuming that's the forerunner to the Bullets. And the Tri-City Blackhawks. Blackhawks. As a coach, he set NBA records with 938 wins and 9 championships.
Auerbach was vital in breaking down color barriers in the NBA. He made history by drafting the first African-American NBA player, Chuck Cooper, in 50. Introducing the first African-American starting five in 64 and hiring Bill Russell as the first African-American head coach in North American sports in 1966.
Now, I've heard of Chuck Cooper, but only because of shoes, I think. I think that's where I know the name from. But now I understand the significance of why you'd have Chuck Cooper. It was funny. You know, Jackie Robinson's such a big name, but Chuck Cooper obviously doesn't have that same sort of ring to it at all. Bill Russell was the documentary that I saw. I don't know. I was blanking. I was like, oh, my gosh, who's the guy who's won, like, 10 champions? I just could not remember off the top of my head.
Bill Russell, now,
it
Magic
didn't
Johnson.
Seem like, when it mentioned how many wins he had, 938. I was like... I don't think that that's too many. Like, I know there's only 80 games in a season. Obviously, you don't win all your games, but I'm like, if you won, like, 50 games in a season, like, if there's a coach for more than 20 years, that's bad. Anyway, I looked up after the 2022-2023 season to see where he falls on that list. He's now 12th. So I'm going to read upwards of people who's ahead of him. Bill Fitch, 944. I've not heard of him. Rick Adelman, I've certainly heard of. 1,042. A lot of these coaches are people since I've been in the States.
Wait, can you also read the team?
It doesn't say. Oh. Sometimes it's more than one. Doc Rivers, 1,096. Larry Brown, 1,098. Phil Jackson, I think you probably heard of, 1,155.
I don't even know the head coach.
He was the Bulls in the 90s. He was Bulls, but also Lakers as well, when Kobe and Shaq were playing together.
I don't even know any coaches. I just know the players.
George Karl, 1,175. Pat Riley, 1,210. Jerry Sloan, 1,221. Lenny Wilkins, I'm not familiar with, 1,332. Don Nelson, 1,335. And number one on the list, you might know, Greg Popovich.
Wait, was he the Bulls guy?
No, he's San Antonio. He's still at San Antonio. He's been there for years. Yeah, the Spurs. So they've got the who was the number one pick, the tall French guy.
Wembanyama.
That's it. I can't pronounce his name.
Wembanyama.
Victor Wembanyama. Thank you.
It's because he is like Spider-Man.
So, yeah, he's got a star next to him. He's the only active coach on that list, actually. But, yeah, 1,366. Not had a great season, actually, the Spurs. Even though they had the number one pick, they've kind of struggled a lot this year.
He has, like, long arms like a spider and then web.
But I was kind of curious to see who there was. Some of the people who have taught at George Washington include Clarence Thomas, the U.S. Supreme Court Justice person, Edward Teller, a nuclear physicist known as the father of the hydrogen bomb, George Gamow, physicist known for the Big Bang Theory, and you might not recognize the name, but I know you know the Big Bang Theory, Al Gore, a former U.S. Vice President, he was in the election against Bush in 2000, and Walter Reed, who you now recognize the name at least, the U.S. Army physician and pioneer in epidemiology and biomedicine, the namesake of Walter Reed Army Medical Center. Like, I've heard of Walter Reed as a medical place, but I didn't know who Walter Reed the person was. And actually,
I didn't know Walter Reed until we went to the game.
Yeah, as we were driving, it's like Walter Reed Avenue or something, or Drive, whatever it was. And I was like, okay. I didn't know that part at all. April 9th, 2024, we already talked about it. We got there, we were driving there. We got there about 10 minutes beforehand.
We found a cool park.
Well, that's a little after. We found somewhere to park, and we knew it was Field 4. We couldn't really tell where Field 4 was, and then we heard some noises on the other side of to where we were looking, and it was like, oh, that's an announcement. So we went over, found the stadium. We were on the far side, so we managed to get there. So we got there easily for the first pitch. Anything you want to talk about the stadium at all?
It's like the benches at Bowie.
Okay.
But it's like a really small minor league stadium.
It looked really nice. It was a great place to watch a game.
Yeah, and it's nice because they're rich.
Yeah. Well, we're going to talk about some of that money they got in a second. One of the things I liked particularly was the front row seats, and it was all general admission.
Yeah.
It said you had to pay for tickets, and I took a picture of that sign because you saw it later. I went online. You cannot buy tickets. So I don't know if they just... Because it said through Ticketmaster. But unless they have somebody who's at the gate for certain days, I don't know. I don't know the answer to that one. And what I really liked was, because we did go to the front row, was you were at a very similar level to what the players are. So if you're at Coppin, you're probably about 12 feet above, something like that. It's kind of high.
No, actually, if you're standing...
Tall. Well, I guess what your head height is.
Well, their head is like at the... Damon's is level with the walking park.
I don't know about everybody else. But probably about 9 feet then, above. Whereas this, you were level. So I'm actually getting some good pictures of the players. But yeah, it was really cool that you could be that close. And it felt like where we were sat, where the umpire, when he called a strike, he was pointing at us. It was like he was pointing at you. He was like, strike, and letting us know.
And there were some pretty bad calls.
No, there was. Yeah, you actually said that he was a little bit like Angel Hernandez, which is definitely not a compliment.
I said we had Angel Hernandez at the plate.
I'm going to tell you a little bit about Tucker Field. At Barcroft Park is one of the top collegiate facilities in the region, I would agree, following a series of renovations. Upgraded amenities include a new field turf playing surface, expanded grandstand-style seating, covered dugouts, bullpens, batting cages, press box, concession stands, which were closed when we were there, restrooms, entry plaza, and expanded parking. I didn't actually go into the restroom. What were the quality of the facilities there? Because sometimes it's just a porta potty.
It's like an average bathroom.
Okay, all right, so nothing
it's
special.
It's like a, like you know when you're on the turnpike, it's like that kind of bathroom.
Okay, well that's not too bad. That's
yeah, it's just an average bathroom.
Okay, I think
pretty
that's
clean.
All right. Okay, go ahead.
In October 2014, the facility was officially dedicated to baseball alumnus Ave Tucker, following the multi-million-dollar donation to the athletic department and the university. That's the million-dollar donation stuff.
Yeah, there was a sign that said two people have donated $1 million. I was like, woof, that's a lot of money.
Read more about Tucker's gift and the dedication ceremony.
Oh, no, I got something from that. So I started clicking on links from GW Today. In 2014, nearly 40 years after he had chased down fly balls on the ellipse as a speedy outfielder for GW, Avram Ave Tucker. When I saw Ave, I thought it was a female to begin with. I've got to admit, I didn't think it was short for Avram at all. Made a $2 million donation that will enhance athletics and academics at his alma mater. Mr. Tucker, co-founder and CEO of TM Financial Forensics LLC, attended GW on a baseball scholarship during his junior and senior years and has long wanted to repay GW for giving him the opportunity to play baseball at a Division I school. In recognition of his generosity, the board trustee board in 2014 named the field at Barcroft Park in his honor.
Tucker Field at Barcroft Park host in October 2018 the facility grew with the addition of the Fast Knot clubhouse.
Yes, I'm not sure of the pronunciation. I think Fast
Serving
Knot.
Serving
as
German. A year-round home for the program, a special ceremony and dedication was held to honor the Fast Knot, as well as those who helped contribute to the construction of the facility.
So, in 2018, Dave and Tam Fastnacht, parents of the current GW baseball team member Nate Fastnacht, class of 2020, designated their generous gift towards construction of the facility and the continued ascension of the GW program. Quote, "We are blessed to be part of the GW family and are excited to help bring this new clubhouse and training facility to fruition. Coach Richie has done an impressive job building GW baseball into a very competitive program within the A-10, and we expect that with daily access to these new facilities, he'll be able to take this program to the next level."
Tucker Field at Barcroft Park hosted the 2015 A-10 Championship, marking the first time the annual event has been hosted by GW.
Yeah.
The facility also hosted the 2018 A-10 Championship.
So it's possible we might not have to go down to Richmond. It's possible that we might just be able to...
I kind of like the Richmond one, though, since they have a lot more seats.
You're still close. All right, the history for this one, copping at 0-29 all-time against GW, going back to 1990. I was excited for this one. I was like, this would be really cool if we could see the first copping win ever. And I'm actually going to do the big innings. I'm going to do 1.5 innings to start this one. Not a great start for copping, actually. Di Vittorio lined out to right field, Holm flied out to center, and then Damon Gaither grounded out to the pitcher. So 1-2-3 for copping. Big inning for George Washington, bottom of the first inning. Gates walked, Levy singled through the right side. They said Clough, C-L-O-U-G-H, in England or in Nottingham. I don't know if you remember when we went to Nottingham, we stood next to a statue of a person. That was Brian Clough, and that was C-L-O-U-G-H. So I'm glad they said it was Clough, because I would never have guessed it was Clough. He grounded out to the shortstop, but it did allow a runner to score. Schwartz walked. Schwartz stole second. Brett Young singled up the middle for two RBIs. Brett Young stole. Tuffy struck out swinging. Brett Young advanced to third on a passed ball and then scored on a throwing error by the catcher. And then Walker grounded out to the shortstop. I felt kind of sorry for Giovanni, who was pitching in this one, because one of them, it got hit down the middle. He got his glove up really quick, and it kind of bounced into the place exactly where the fielders were not. And you could tell very early in this first inning, they were aggressive on the base paths. And they were quick as well.
Yeah, I remember Brett Young stealing second.
Yeah, like they had the stats for everything on the score, and you could see like on base percentage was like 500. A lot of them had already had 15 to 20 stolen bases, and the Cardinals were making good throws in, and it just wasn't going to in time. It was like it wasn't even close. Top of the second, Sam Nieves struck out swinging. Jaden Asensio singled to center. Daniel Moore singled to left. Chris Marte walked, which I think loads the bases up. Bryce Thompson walked. Victor Alonji grounded out to third base, but that allowed Daniel Moore to score 4-2. And then Anthony DiVittorio singled to center field, two RBIs, taking the game 4-4, four runs, three hits, no errors, and just one left on base. So it didn't start great for Culpin, and it looked like this could quickly get away from them. But the guys came back well. They batted well. And do you want to take it in for the rest? How did they do in the second inning?
Second inning, bounce back four, tied third inning.
So they didn't get any runs then in the bottom of the second. Yeah,
third good. Inning, sixth, four. Fourth inning, 7-6.
Coppin takes the lead again, yep.
Uh-huh. Fifth inning,
Eight to seven. Eight George to Washington, seven. And nothing George in the Washington. Sixth. So eight.
Seventh inning, it is 10-7. Mm-hmm. Eighth inning, 12-7, final score.
Yeah, so they were close. They were within one after six innings, which, considering the history of this meeting, I thought that was pretty good, actually. Seven runs on seven hits for Coppin, 11 hits on 12 runs for George Washington.
7-11, if you look at it.
A couple of errors for each team. Attendance, 42, Jackie Robinson's number. There wasn't too many people there. I think that was accurate. I think that was perfectly accurate. 75 degrees and sunny. I don't know about sunny. You actually got a little bit burnt over the weekend. And Mommy was like, oh, make sure you got some sun cream for JJ. And she did. She gave it to me. Left it in the car. And it was fine. I thought it was overcast. I think, if I'm correct, you got 13 balls in this game.
Yeah.
There wasn't many areas you could really get them. You had to kind of go through a little gate to go and get some stuff, but
I was fine.
Yeah.
Because there was like a little bar that you like, it's like a school door.
Yeah.
You press the bar and it opens.
I didn't see any of their players going to try and get balls at all.
Yeah, no.
Now, I know you've got a lot, but even so.
They're rich, so they can just leave it out.
I pretty much think so. I don't think they care. But yeah, you had in between innings, because we were close to the Coppin dugout. You could just kind of raised your arm, let coach know you got a ball, then threw. There was one. I think you threw about five balls. You're like, these three are game balls. These two you could use for batting practice. That's kind of funny.
No, two were game balls and okay. Three... We're for batting
practice. Okay, but it was kind of funny that you were giving him instructions on how he could use them as well. But yeah, there was a lot of stuff there. Anything you want to talk about from the game? I have a few comments that I wrote down.
There was a pitcher with a 108 ERA.
Oh, yeah. He only had 0.1 innings. So I'd work 0.1 of an inning pitched. So, yeah, he gave up six runs with only one out in part of that game. But he quickly went down. He did much better after that. Actually, there was kind of a lot of high ERAs. I think the lowest ERA of anyone who came into pitch was about 14.
And the highest was 108.
It was to begin with. This part I hadn't realized, JJ. And like I said, I thought Coppin were close in this game. When I read the review, CSU stranded 10 runners over the last five innings. That was how many people they left on base.
And
they left the bases loaded in the fifth as well. And they had two people on in the sixth, the eighth, and the ninth. So, hold on, that's not correct then. Oh, yeah, it is. 4-2, 2-2 is 10. I miscounted.
There was also, when we thought it was like the third inning, But we didn't think that it was going to be the fourth inning, and it was already the fourth inning after only like...
Way too quick. One name I did see, Maguire Tuffy, but the Maguire was spelled like Mark Maguire. I could not find out any information if he's named after Mark Maguire, but I did find this out. I might have seen him play before. He plays for the South County Braves in 2021. I don't think you know who that team is, JJ. No. It's the Cal Ripken Summer League in Lawton. For some reason, you didn't want to go to that game. I was like, hey, do you want to come to this game? And you're like, no. I'm like, all right, bye. I went and watched that game because it was so close. I was like, I didn't even know they had like baseball in Lawton. They play at the high school. So I might have actually seen Maguire Tuffy play before, but I'm not sure. You did talk about some of the bad umpiring, and that's definitely true.
Angel Hernandez.
Coppin actually got the benefit of it early, though. There was one, the Coppin runner was out. There's no doubt about it, and he called him safe. But after that, every single other one went GW's way. One that I saw that he called him safe before he'd even got to the base. I'm like, I don't know what's going on here. There was a lot of disbelief from the crowd, and I think the
where he was out by like a mile and they were safe.
Yeah, it wasn't good. And I think the frustrating one for us as well was the last bat. I'm trying to remember. I think it was Chris Marte who was up. And he kept getting them around his ankle and he kept calling them strikes. I'm like, these are so low. And there were some that were clearly out of the strike zone. The home plate umpire we were not particularly impressed with, I got to say. For college this time, I thought we would talk about the wrap-up of the competition. In the female side of things, Iowa lost to South Carolina 87-75 in the final. Caitlin Clark, obviously a big draw for this. The Elite Eight matchup was a new record. You actually told me about one other record. 10 million viewers. The one you told me about was 14.43 million viewers. That was the semifinal. And the final was nearly 19 million. So they broke the record every single round as they were going through of events. There was actually more people watched the women's final than the men's final. It was the first time that's ever happened.
Yeah, it was the most watched ESPN game.
Yeah, I can totally believe that. Just to give you some context, again, for 19 million, last year's NBA Finals averaged 11 million, and the final game had 13 million. The World Cup, the last World Cup in 2022, 22 million people watched. So that's a little bit more. The Super Bowl's obviously way ahead of that, yeah. 123 million was the last Super Bowl. But that's football. That's always significant.
And then the World Cup, a lot of people.
And I found this graph, which is going to be terrible for an audio podcast, but you can kind of see here, this is the women's, most people for the women's, it's between about 2 and 4 million every single year. Until last year, it went to 10 million, and then this year, it went to 19 million. And the men's finals have generally got less, and then this was the first time that, like I said, the women's had more than the men's. But I thought, I'm sure that's the Caitlin Clark effect, for sure. I'm sure that's the big fact. Apparently, Steph Curry is a big fan of her.
Yeah, they had a three-point contest.
Oh, okay. Oh, that would be why then. All right, name game.
It was her, or it was an NBA, a WNBA star.
You asked me, do I have a name game for you? I do. This one's for you, first of all. We didn't have one last week because we already had so many, so nothing to update on that one. Do I have to say High Five Tom did get a Pee Wee Reese eventually. Took him a little while, but he did not give up. So I did get a text the other day telling me about that. Yours this week is C. Edward K.
Is that the real initials?
Yeah. The first clue is it's a current player and there are no tricks. And I've actually got four clues. That was the first one. All right, second clue. Still plays for the team he debuted with in 2008. So obviously somebody who's been playing for quite a while now, 16 years. Third clue. He has a career hits allowed per nine innings pitched average of 6.82, the third lowest in MLB history.
Well, he's a pitcher.
Yep, and obviously a pretty good pitcher.
What was the last initial again?
K. C. Edward K.
C.K. and he's a pitcher. Mm-hmm. All right.
Got one more clue if necessary, and I think this will give it away because it's got the team in it. All right, last play. No. Oh, not yet?
I was just saying, all right, yeah. No clue yet. I was just nodding that it was a team. Oh, yeah, they were playing that during the
yes, the pitching when they went out for the pitching mound. Yes, they did. Well, always a lot of dead air. All right, last clue. No. During the 2013 offseason, the Dodgers signed him to a franchise-record 7-year, $215 million contract extension, and he also pitched a no-hitter in 2014. Oh, wow. I thought you'd get this. I thought you knew this person Dodgers a little bit better. Yeah.
CK.
Dodgers pitcher. One of the three best in MLB history. Well, on that one stat, anyway.
Dodgers pitchers.
The answer is, because everyone else who's listening knows, is Clayton Kershaw.
I was thinking. You
had plenty of time to think. All right, the one for our listeners to try. You can tell me if you know who it is, but this is kind of a tricky one, actually. The clue this time is G. Lee A. The letter G, middle name is Lee, L-E-E, and then the last name is A. And the two clues are, the first clue is, won two World Series, one in the 70s and one in the 80s. And the second clue, I don't know if this is that helpful, was a bat boy for the USC Trojans and then signed for the Brooklyn Dodgers in the 1950s.
How would anybody know?
G. Lee A. This person won two World Series. All right, well, I don't think Jackson knows it, but anyone who does know can certainly send us a message on the JGB _ Jackson feed, and they can tell us. And I can already tell you as soon as we finish recording, or you can wait till next... Actually, I should make you wait till next week's episode as well.
Tell me.
All right, you got any outro music for me?
Yeah.
Oh, next week's episode will be Norfolk State, and Coppin have done pretty well so far.